How does spirituality and personal beliefs factor into your coaching and personal cancer journey?
Yeah, for me personally, I've always been a spiritual seeker, and when the diagnosis came and I started making changes, certainly when a diagnosis comes, those of us that do have a religious or spiritual background often look to God or a higher power to help us, to give us strength to we rely on our faith. Those of us that don't have religion or spiritual practices or don't believe in a higher power, may, or even those that do, may feel like God has left you with a terrible outcome here, and just start to get really depressed about it. If you can realize that spirituality means an internal connection to something greater than yourself, that there is a higher power that you can come to rely on for strength and meaning and purpose in your life, that can really help you to find comfort, to find hope, to rely on that as a source of strength each and every day. And for those that are not religious, just looking at nature and realizing that something created this, some larger being, some higher power must be at play here. And connecting to nature is a great way for people to, enter into that spiritual dimension. I needed to learn to take time to slow down, and to developing a meditation practice was a huge part of my healing. And I did in the beginning, a lot was connecting in nature and really sitting in at my serenity pond, just a small man-made little waterfall in my garden, and really recognizing that the birds, the flowers, the trees, the bees, all of that could bring a lot of serenity and peace, and really help me to drop back into that rest and repair mode.
How do you personally deal with setbacks or bad news, both in your health journey and in coaching others?
Yeah, for me, as again as an optimist, the bad news can be a setback for a couple of days, but I usually bounce back fairly quickly and say, okay, there's something I can do about this. I'm a firm believer in I've got agency here, and I can do something to help myself. For those that I coach, it can be really hard. That scan that shows just a little bit of progression. People get upset over a scan that doesn't show that doesn't show lessening of the disease, but shows stability. That still can be disheartening for them. They're like, I've done so much, I want it to decrease. And it takes time. And the timeline isn't your timeline. There is no rushing it or hurrying it. You need to hold steady and just keep doing the good things that you're doing and believe that healing is possible. And I coach people to really have conversations with the fear and the anxiety that come up. Let's talk about what that emotion is trying to tell you. And let's befriend that emotion, because we know we need all of our emotions. Sometimes those emotions just get on a continual loop because we try to push them aside. We don't want to listen to it. We don't want to hear what it has to say. And, especially fear and anxiety and worry. So it's about embracing those emotions, having a conversation with them, really getting in touch with what they're trying to tell us, and then continually catching ourselves as the negative thoughts come up and reframing that thought. Okay, I feel anxious because my cancer showed progression, and I'm really worried about this, but I'm going to choose another response. I know that there's more I can do. I know that I have some agency here. So that's the coaching that I do with people to help them through it. And once we fire and, rewire these things, as we know, it can start to change.
How do you address the fear and uncertainty that often accompany a cancer diagnosis?
Well, a little bit like I just talked about, right? There is a lot of fear and uncertainty that comes with it. And helping people to get in touch with that and recognize that that is going to be there. It's not going to go away. And you can't smother your fear, but you can't live in fear all the time either. So befriending your fear and learning to bring in the other emotions that are more repairing, right? That put you into that healing space. And it takes practice. It just takes, each day trying a little bit more to overcome that worry and that fear and start to feel more hope and faith and belief in the possibility and in what you're doing.
Great, thank you very much. And what are your thoughts on the role of genetics in cancer? And can lifestyle changes overcome genetic predispositions?
Yeah, I love the field of epigenetics. It's so important. Bruce Lipton and the biology of belief, that really opened up to so many of us the ability to recognize that our genetics are not we're not predestined to experience what our parents or our ancestors experienced. We have the ability through lifestyle changes to turn on and turn off those genes. So we want to turn on the health promoting genes, and we do that with lifestyle change, right? And we can turn off the disease promoting genes with those same lifestyle changes. So by eating a more whole food diet, by moving our bodies, by practicing good emotional and mental health, and by deepening our spiritual practices, we can get our body, mind, and spirit in a more balanced place, in a state where repair can happen.
And how do you help clients navigate the overwhelming amount of information and advice about cancer treatment?
Yes, so many books to read, so many summits to watch, so much information, so many experts to follow. It is overwhelming. At some point, we need to stop. We need to take a break. We need to actually go within. This striving constantly for the answer and looking and searching and researching and reading more and doing more just keeps us in that stress mode, in that fight or flight state. It's really important that we take time to sit back, to just do nothing. Non-being, non-doing rather, being, just being is really, really important. Just watch clouds pass in the sky. Just daydream. Just watch the bees, as they do their thing on the flowers and fly around the garden. Watch a frog. Frogs are great teachers for just being. And we need that state, that practice, so that we can get into that rest and repair mode. And if we're constantly looking for more information and for the answers, we're not doing good for ourselves. Yes, learning more is great, but at some point, take a break and say, okay, I've got all this great information and I need to put things in action, right? Taking action is what really needs to happen, because you can continue to read, but if you don't put something into action, if you don't start taking some small steps towards those lifestyle changes, then it doesn't do you any good to read more and keep doing more and searching more. So, putting yourself on a little bit of a hiatus from research, maybe giving somebody else on your healing team, friends or family members, can do research for you and tell you when they find something that might be of importance to you. That can be a good way to do it. Making sure that you take time to live your life, to go have fun and to do things that are fulfilling and enjoyable. That is as big a part of healing as anything. Increasing our positive emotions. Do not put life on hold in order to research and read and do and do and do. Yes, it can take a lot of effort to learn how to eat a new way or to add exercise in or to do more of these appointments and healing modalities, But don't forget that some of the healing modalities you need to be doing are things you can do all by yourself or with your family. And you don't have to have appointment after appointment after appointment with all of the practitioners that offer all the things.
Thank you. I'm going to throw it out to the audience to ask a couple of questions.
Sure.
Stephen V, please state where you're from and ask your question.
Buffalo, New York. I'm wondering these days what you're eating and drinking for breakfast, lunch, and dinner typically.
So typically for me, my breakfast is overnight oats. I'm a little bit addicted to overnight oats, and I use oats and a protein powder. It's a plant-based protein powder and almond milk with raisins and nuts and cinnamon and flax seeds and all kinds of good stuff in it. And I have fruit with that, and I drink green tea. And then for lunch, it's often a big salad, lots of veggies on a big salad, or maybe it's leftovers from dinner the night before. I do try to eat a lot of veggies, so I try to have a lot of vegetables on hand and already cleaned and chopped and ready to go. I try to prepare meals where there's multiple vegetables available. I have a husband and two sons still living at home, young adults, but still here with us. I made a lovely Asian veggie Thai bowl, and I used bean thread noodles. They used spaghetti noodles, and it had lots of veggies in it with a nice dressing on it. They will often want meat. I don't do any meat. I will eat some fish and seafood. I typically choose to do that only at home on occasion when I can control the quality of that meat and seafood. So I always look for a wild caught. And I do a lot of legumes and beans and nuts and seeds in my meals. And when I do that big salad, it's got beans and nuts and hemp seeds and flax seeds and chia seeds. And so I really load up on some of those nutrient dense foods that are going to help me. So I hope that helps.
Are you exclusively organic?
You know, I'm not. I try to buy organic. I really pay attention to the clean 15 and the dirty dozen. So I will make sure that the dirty dozen is organic when possible. But I've also come to realize that it's better for me to eat non-organic grapes than it is for me to switch to eating chips or, you know, some other not so healthy snack. And so depending on what my local grocer has available, I do try to do as much of it organic as I can.
Do you think white tea is about the same as green tea?
I don't know about that. Can't
Okay.
answer that one. Sorry.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Stephen. Thanks for the question.
All right. Next question is coming from Michelle P. Michelle, please state where you're from and ask your question.
Hi, yes, thank you so much for taking my question. I have two quick questions. First, do you know of any radical remissions survivors that had brain cancer? And then my second question is, how do you become a radical remission coach?
Great. Both questions are easy. Yes, I do know of radical remission survivors who have overcome a brain tumor. Christian is a story of a man in Switzerland who overcame a brain tumor. And one of our radical remission coaches, Cindy, also overcame. So there are stories in our healing database, and we share stories through the Radical Remission podcast. It's called Radical Remission Stories That Heal podcast, and also in our Healing Story database on our website. And the other question about coaching, you can find that on the radicalremission.com website as well. In the things we do, you'll find that coaching is listed there. It tells you more about it, and you can put yourself on the wait list to find out more. We open up the coaching program every fall, end of the year, and take people through an 8-week program to certify them on radical remission. Would love to see you there, Michelle.